Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2016. Mr. Charles Ross, performance sportswear design consultant, presents Learning from Successful and Wrong Recycling Strategies.
As Pamela said, hi, I'm Charles. I'm an Anglophile. That means I'm going to present in English, but also my slides are in English. Can someone wave frantically at me right now if you're not happy reading English slides? Because if you aren't, I'll read them out for you. But is everyone happy to read English slides? That works well? Good. We can work on that. There are a lot of people here that I don't recognize, and because of that, and it's a much bigger subject, I'm going to go back to basics to start with. For those that know me, it gets interesting about halfway through. That's where I've put the more interesting and relevant material. But my general role is that I am a connector. My proper job, what people know me as, is I teach performance sportswear design at universities. So my graduates are wandering around the halls. There's some in the audience here. They are your competitors, they are rivals, but they're also people serving you. They're quite used to me and my style. What I want to point out is that because I handle a lot of different projects, a lot of information comes through my desk. What I've tried to do is take a lot of that applies on this principle, and I will start to discuss it with some detail. If I just let you guys read this whilst I waffle on, because I've still got a few other admin things to do. It gets interesting when we're halfway down the slide, by the way, the second half of the slide. Now, I've worked on various projects, from working with the EOG, Pamela's predecessor, to RAP, which Anne mentioned earlier, which is the British government's venture to reduce carbon and waste. They also have a textile project that we're going to talk about in slightly more detail. But because the whole of today's theme is around recycling, I'm going to be mentioning information that some people have mentioned before. Sorry for boring you. And also some people afterwards are going to come back and reinforce the point. It's just what happens when you get a variety of presenters. Now, the presentation will hopefully only take half an hour. I'll prompt you halfway through for when we're onto the more interesting stuff. Afterwards, the presentation goes onto the Performance Day site. When it's on the Performance Day site, access it, download it. There's an audio if you could really put up with my monotone voice. But you don't really need to spend the whole session desperately scribbling notes. If I start to speak too fast, or I go into a strange accent, just heckle me, bring me back to reality, things will be a bit normal. Hopefully you guys are starting to think about the bottom half of this slide. Now, there are lots of brands doing very good practice in this area. I have tried to name check a few of them, but of course my list is not extensive, and it also gets a bit boring if I keep on mentioning Valde and Patagonia. So there's a variety of them, but I've mentioned two people who are possibly the exemplars in this area. But onto the actual content of what I'm meant to talk about. We do performance clothing. The top two things that I've pointed out, yes, that's what we claim to do. Clothing is more a vanity thing of what we choose. But I now have pre-teenage daughters, and the thing that I am fearing the most is that rather than going out at weekends on the bike on the hills, they want to go shopping. Now, I'm really proud that they show no interest in shopping whatsoever at the moment, but it has become a leisure activity. It's what people do. And it is this little antidepressant that people have for some reason. I can't work out why. They feel that spending money buying clothing will actually make them happier. But the key point, it's our business. It's what we do. It's how we make money. So whereas we must question it, we must also respect it. And hopefully, you guys don't know that accurately, but the piles of clothes that that we have. RAP, which is the British government project, this is a figure from 2.5 years ago. It's in the process of being updated. To give you an idea, we in the UK think we have the number of garments in people's wardrobes that there are of people, the same number as people in this world. We think we've now got 7 billion garments floating around the UK. Quite a shock to think about. This figure's much nearer a grand, and that's an average between high fashion and low fashion. When we buy stuff, it's our money, we're considering it, we make a choice of what we want to buy. We put a lot of thought into its functionality, what we're going to get for our money. For our clothing, it's yet another step up, because it is what projects our personality to others. What we think about how we are going to wear our clothing occupies far too much time, in my opinion. As you can most probably tell, I just put it on in the morning. If it's clean, it works. We're also now entering a stage where, in the old days, we used to make a proper margin on clothing. At the start of the season, we could sell items at full price. Before Christmas was the other time, but it has now changed. And certainly in the UK, we have sales starting in the lead up to Christmas, which was the guaranteed time when we would sell the more expensive winter garments at full margin, and that would carry us through the rest of the season. The reason why this exists is actually because of the pressure we've put on the supply chain. When we started to offshore 25 years ago, if you look at the retail price point of clothing, it's not really moved that much. But we're still making our margin. And we're making our margin by making money by sourcing cheaper. If we source cheaper, we will lower the quality that we know. I'll come onto that later. But also, are we paying enough for the clothing we wear? Right now, as I've said, I work in university. We have Generation X and Y coming out of university. I'm Generation X, I'm post-baby boomer. Generation Y are called the millennials. I have seen the first year of Generation Z within university, people born after 1996. It's not so much the conscious consumer that gets me, it's actually the conscious unconsumer. People who choose not to buy. They're quite happy with this rental model. And to add to that, we are in World Recycle Week. It is Fashion Revolution Week this whole week, because the 24th is a Sunday, they've opened up the whole week to it. Anyway, us academics always put quotes on the board. First one is a Vivienne Westwood, combined down. Very simple, very to the point. I think we all stand for that quality. The second one, I can't actually find who came up with it, but it's that quote about the stain of poor quality lasts far longer than the warm feeling of a good price. And I think that is becoming more and more relevant in these days. But yeah, I'm not yet quite onto the exciting stuff. The people who know me have heard this stuff before. We're in an industry where we push ourselves forward on performance. As a lecturer in this performance sportswear design subject, I say form follows function. They also let me loose at the Royal College with the fashion students. And my definition of fashion for the separation, it's where form follows fantasy. And I'm telling you what, those fashion students can sell properly. They can get the aspirational image, they can get the margin. But it's when the two of them come together and we have the performance and the aesthetic of it looking good. That is the area I think everyone wants to desire to be in. And that area moves. But when you get it right, it is a beautiful thing. And it's something to be celebrated. Now, a bit of background on the UK, some of the traits that we've been looking at on clothing statistics. Essentially, we buy an awful lot of clothing in the UK. The figures are up there. If you go back a decade, we were junking about half of it. Not a good thing to do when you live on an island. There is a lack of holes in the ground. You cannot keep on digging up earth and putting more things in the ground. You start to run out of room. The work that has been going on, we've now cut down the amount being dumped by about two-thirds, which is effective. But what I want to ask is, if we're still dumping clothes, why are we still dumping clothes? Is it because we're lazy? Is it because we don't realise the value of them? Is it that we are uneducated by what the afterlife, the second and third life, of where that clothing can go to? It's a challenge for us. But what we do know is that somebody's made an awful lot of money by selling wardrobes for us to hoard our clothing. Now, if we go back 50 years, British statistics, we all owned a couple of coats. Now that figure has gone up. But I would challenge everyone in this audience, is there a single person, please wave at me, if you own less than five performance coats? I'm really glad we have someone. Okay, that's good. But we have all, because we work in the industry, we've accumulated samples and the such like. But I would challenge you with the question, how often are we expecting our customers to buy a new shell? Are we talking about once a season or once a year? If that shell's going to last for 3 years and we're buying once a season, that's six shells that they've bought before the first shell wears out. Now, that's just in their performance clothing, let alone what they want to wear off the activity area. Anyway, this is the bit where I'm meant to bring together the lines of thought and try and give you subtle hints towards the direction that we can take. The best solution is to make our gear last longer, without a doubt. If we make the gear last longer, no matter how bad it is, no matter if you've made it from naughty chemicals like PTFE and the such like, one garment with a PTFE membrane has far less of an environmental impact in the LCA than two or three that have worn out during the time it takes for the PTFE to wear through. But if we do that, we have to change the business model, because we're based on a business of selling stuff. And if we're going to sell less stuff, we need to make more money by selling less stuff. Now, you just can't put up the price of your items. You've got to look at another money route coming through. Something you're already aware of, the greenest jacket you have is the one already owned by you. How can we take the knowledge from that area and move it into our new business model? One of the ways that we can do it is to start to look at recycling strategies. Now, the drawback, if I say the word recycling, we think of people dumping clothing. We think of things like glass recycling, like paper recycling. Textile recycling is actually a completely different area. And if I can do anything, I would like to impress on you, please don't recycle your garments. Recycling is almost the worst thing to do. No, dumping, it's the worst thing to do. But I think we're an educated audience. Recycling should be your last option. So before that, if I bring up what Annie Leonard said, Annie Leonard's SAC, Story of Stuff, if you've not followed it, well worth following it. When Patagonia launched their Common Threads, a very clean quote from her. Now, that's not the full Common Threads. Common Threads also had reimagine and repurpose and one more category that I could not remember, and Patagonia have now taken down, so I can't access it. But yes, the key thing to do is to reduce, repair, reuse, and then as last option, recycle. So to have slightly more detail, reduce. In Scandinavia, they've already started it. They have a leasing model for clothing. You do not need to buy the clothing. You can have this year's top range jacket and go out and use it for the period you want to use it, for the 2 or 3 weeks. You then give it back to them. It's only a rental garment. They clean it. They provide it for someone else. When you're back on the hill this time next year, you're actually buying the 2017 version that has an improved cut, that has improved performance. Should we be considering that as the rental model? The high street, I haven't caught everyone's progress today as far as the presentations go, but the biggest retailers in Europe at the moment, people like Zara, people like H&M, people like M&S, it's on their work project at the moment not to sell clothing as a concept, to hire clothing. And to explain it in a relatively simple way, you would pay 100 euros per top per year. And when you pay that 100 euros, you're allowed to have that top replaced 3 times during the year. But to get the new version of it, you must take back the old top. And they're working off a model where it's PET or RPET. So a polyester top, you would have the shirt, you would wear it to your heart's content, then you would take it back, it would be reprocessed, and you would get a new one back. But it's the process of hiring rather than owning. We are right next door, and several of you here are designers within the ski industry. The ski industry, for all the newcomers, still hires what you need to go skiing. The outdoor industry, on the other hand, or the bike industry, sell it. Should we look at these other versions? Repair. Right now, we have the Worn Again Tour. It started in Munich for Patagonia, I think, last week. It started in England at Keswick at exactly the same time. Going around, if it's broke, fix it. We have active repair departments within various brands. I've mentioned three there, three of the British ones that I know. But I also want to plug the textile side of the government project I work on. The loveyourclothes.org.uk site is actually full of tips. And it's from coming back and doing the research, we are amazed the public have problems with simple stuff like sewing on buttons. When we detect people are gluing on buttons, we know there is a problem. So yeah, access that. We also have, and I've made lots of hints to it, the servicing model. Servicing model right now, people are struggling cleaning their clothes properly, especially their performance clothing properly. And we have the subject of DWRs that, as we know, are durable water-resistant finishes because they're durable, they wear off. Do we need to replace them? How are we replacing them? On to reuse. Last year at Friedrichshafen, Gift Your Gear won the Outdoor Sustainability Award. Gift Your Gear, if you're unaware, has 1,000 different organizations it has supplied clothing to. Reading their report from the collection that they did in March this year, last month, they made a very interesting observation, which is generally outdoor fabrics that are being handed in because people no longer love them. The fabrics are fine, but they made a very good observation that the zips are getting to 7-8 years old and are actually going. So we now have a component which has downgraded its quality that much that's wearing out, something that needs fixing. We have Valde, who have sponsored an eBay channel for the resale of their garments. Intelligent thinking, keep the garment going. But looking at eBay in the UK, last week when I wrote this, there was just over 1,500 Gore-Tex jackets available for sale. So is it the enterprise within the country that I live in? But yes, people are getting to the stage where when they're falling out of love with garments, at least they are keeping the loop of them going. Gore, it is so easy for Gore to be seen as the evil people. Can I just make reference? Gore started a circular economy project within the outdoor business in 1983. That was before millennials and Generation Z were born. They've been onto the trade. Their hassle, which they had with their project, is that people love their garments so much, either that or they'd paid so much money they weren't willing to give them up, but they could not get the garments back in. It's like when the Common Threads initiative started and Patagonia had all those dumping bins where they said, put your Patagonia fleeces in, and they got the minimum back, so they had to change the brief, which was just put any fleece in. Because when people have paid such a lot of money for a garment, there is an emotional attachment to it, especially if you've started to use it in its performance aspect. When you have climbed something serious, that garment becomes part of you. It's part of your personal history. Recycle. Now, this is what most people consider to be recycling, the downcycling. The interesting bit, do you remember I said recycling should be your last option? If you are going to recycle, go upcycle. Elvis and Cress, I suspect not many of you have heard of Elvis and Cress. Elvis and Cress identified that in London, they were dumping about 10 tons weight of used fire hose every year. Elvis and Cress have salvaged that fire hose, and they've made belts, they've made handbags. In fact, their handbags are about £295. Their weekend bags are just short of £500. They cannot make enough of these items. It's upcycling is when you take waste and you add something to it to vastly increase the value of it. Elvis and Cress now use up all the redundant fire hose from the United Kingdom. When it gets decommissioned, Elvis and Cress pay for it rather than it going to landfill. But we have now actually started to import old fire hose from the Netherlands because we don't have enough in our own country. Made by Scavenger or Green Peak Gear, once again, reasonably small British project. Made by Scavenger makes belts out of old climbing rope. This is one of them. Dog leads, items like that. Freitag, we are almost at the traditional home of Freitag. I don't need to explain Freitag to Europeans, do I? The Arc'teryx Bird's Nest Project. The Arc'teryx Bird's Nest Project, Arc'teryx isn't normally a brand you associate with sustainability. They have done a vast amount in this area. The principal driver isn't so much to change their public opinion that they are rivaling a brand like Patagonia, but they are full of employees who are millennials and Generation X. And us employees care about what a company does, take pride in what a company does. And the Bird's Nest Project is how they, with their Canadian production of Gore-Tex, all their offcuts they keep in a pile, and every November the factory comes in, gives up a weekend free to come in, and they make rain cakes out of them. And then the following week they go around all the hobos of Vancouver. So if you want to see the latest generation of Gore-Tex, go round and be a hobo in Vancouver. They have some of the best performing fabric out there. But they do it not because they're that concerned about the financial value. I'm not saying they are not concerned about the environment. The number one reason why they do it is their staff love them for doing it. And our biggest problem at the moment on brands is staff turn, is losing people and having to recruit them. Millennials are coming into companies and believing the marketing, and then when they're in the reality of it, they're falling out of love. Outdoor Waste Lab, we have the trendy guy in the hipster beard on that side. That is Benjamin. You need to go and speak to him afterwards about Outdoor Waste Lab. They take old Gore-Tex jackets and they cut them up and they make pencil cases. My daughters are both at school and they have Gore-Tex pencil cases, which technically is a totally useless application of Gore-Tex, but it was a waste material. They are cool and hip and trendy because of Benjamin. Look at small projects like this. They work very well. But yeah, that's upcycling. So my plea to you is try and get everything up to this stage. But if you have to downcycle, we're all aware of these fibers. We've got Torre in there, we've got Teijing, we've got others. We've got brands like Finisterre in England, who are now making garments out of 100% recycled post-consumer fibres. We have Amateris just over behind me. I do some project work with them, especially on their recycled fabrics and the PFC-free DWRs. Worn again is one of those things that is now popping up within designers, because you will find from the design brief, the worst thing to recycle is a mixed fiber, of which polycotton has been the start. Worn Again have now developed the technology where they can take out the PET, the polyester, and they can take out cellulose. The PET becomes rPET, the cellulose then becomes a fertilizer. So it is completely reused rather than it having to go into landfill. Anyway, bit more of detail. Collection schemes, we have the traditional collection schemes. SOEX are the guys who run ICO, used by all the big brands, the Adidas's and the Nikes, or iCollect. And then you also have the small brands. LMB is the one I always quote. LMB is an East London operation. They are my personal favorites, because when you look at their workforce is a third of their workforce are on day release from prison. A third of their workforce have actually been let out of prison, have served their sentence, and they actually enjoyed working there. They've come back because for them it's a start in life. It's someone prepared to give them a job. And then a third are hardcore people who either haven't offended or who haven't been caught. But recycling is a good thing, but we also have a social welfare thing. And I would point to you, if you can, think of the social welfare of the operation at the same time. We've got M&S swapping, where you're bringing in items when you're purchasing new clothing from M&S. If you brought in items, they will give you a voucher, which is effectively a £5 discount for over £35 or over £40 spend. It doesn't actually come out of the sustainability budget, it comes out of the sales promotion budget, because it's less than the UK tax that we have. It's a little promotion, but the M&S are doing good things restocking, mainly because, I can't remember which one it was, had a massive fire and lost the whole of their stock within Huddersfield. I've forgotten that one. But the key lesson to learn is the need to make it easy for the consumer, for the garment owner, to bring the item back. I know people who have experimented with free post, but that actually turns out to be reasonably expensive. I know people who work on a voluntary basis, collecting it and shipping it. And I've made a reference to Ford there, because that's going to come in on the next slide. But I don't know how many of you are aware, Ford, we all consider make and sell cars, and that is their profit center. Right now, Ford do not make their biggest profit from selling cars. Ford make more profit from leasing and servicing cars than from selling cars. If they can change, I think the rest of us can change. Sorting, some basic statistics for the UK. If you give back your most worn out undergarments, they still have value. I'm mainly talking to men here, because we only give up our underwear when it has holes in. The dead weight, if we put it in for recycling into a charity system, is we will shred it into rags, industrial rags, because it has no value in what it has, and it's worth about £30 to £35 a ton. If we put it into landfill, by the way, in the UK, it now costs us £150 to put it into landfill. So I've already given you a difference of £180 a ton. If that clothing is good enough to sell, if it's performance clothing, it's worth £1,000 a ton. If it's fashion, the estimate is about £800 a ton. So if the clothing is good enough to be sold on, and just don't think because you bought the latest fashions from one of these fast fashion retailers that it is of no interest because the quality of the garments is lower. These charity collection schemes adore to have the more fashionable stuff, to make it a bit more trendy, because we all have visions of the crusty smell as soon as we walk into a charity shop. The other question that always comes up is reprocessing. When you're on technical performance materials, we have the traditional Teijing Eco Circle model, where the items are going back to Japan and the Pacific Rim to be reprocessed, and people are asking questions about the carbon footprint of this. Can I just point out, those containers are going back east anyway. The extra carbon footprint of putting something on a container is minimal, all right? At least that fiber's being reused. Although, if you look at the archway through there, you will see now there are some European operations. It's done, by the way, by Anna, who sat next to Benjamin, who's the other intelligent person to look at. We now have European reprocessing operations as well. Okay, to start to pull things together. First line is obvious. We have a world that's changing. You have a choice to change your business or to lose your business. That is what I would advocate. We have a customer who, with the direct communication between brands, the access to further information, is actually more intelligent than most of us realize. They're going to click on soon about their garments and how bad the treatment is. Right at the moment, the Fashion Revolution project is in its third year. It's gaining momentum every year. These questions are going to become bigger. Now, the other option, other than the moral argument, is that I can point out to you that if your customer's going to start to revitalize their garments, if they're going to start to repair them, do you really want them to do an awful job? I am willing to guess, if I go round, no, in fact, I will do it. In this room right now, how many of you this year in 2016, please show me with your hands, have done a service wash on your washing machine? I have two. I am very impressed. Okay, I've been caught out. I have three. Thank you. Okay, if you have not done a service wash in the last 30 washes in your machine is now operating inefficiently, and it will have a lifetime half of if you service wash it on a regular basis. You know, when you bought your washing machine, you had that really thick instruction booklet that you didn't read? You need to do a service wash. But we will talk about it. Customers aren't out and out lazy. Quite often, naively, they are not treating the garment as well. We are in a world where we realize now, we comprehended that DWRs wear out and we need to reproof them. It's actually much easier to wash the garment and clean the dirt, the contamination off the DWR, that will actually work a lot better without the need to reproof it. But are you washing it properly? If you're going to ever do anything in DWRs, take a tip from me. Please do a service wash, clean your machine. If your machine has detergent gunk in, the DWR processing you're doing will not be effective. Easy thing to do. But what I'm spelling out to you is that you now have an opportunity as a brand to engage your customer, not just at the point of sale and say, hey, that's your garment, you go off and use it. You do with it whatever you want. What I'm portraying to you is, why don't you try and have a long, in-depth relationship? Why don't you try and push your values? Why don't you try and show them that you care about that garment even after sale? I think it will improve loyalty. And that should mean repurchase. Okay, a project I've worked on specifically for the Great Recovery. This is more for the designers of the industry. If you really want your designer to start changing the way they design, is a really easy thing to do. Take them to landfill. Take them to where textiles are being dumped. It is embarrassing. I have seen designers weep because when they produce something and it only came onto market 4 or 6 months ago and they're seeing it being landfilled already, what they put their energy, their desire, their passion into creating, is actually now unloved. All the designers I work with, I think, take pride in what they do. They do not like seeing their stuff being landfilled. Look at which items are being landfilled. There's a bit more detail on thegreatrecovery.org.uk, but I'll come back to another misquoted thing that says designers are responsible for 80% of the carbon footprint of a garment. They influence it. I say no, they don't. The specifiers influence that 80%. The specifiers are the people who say the garment must be designed this way. The designers I meet on a pretty regular basis all actually care, all want to make it better. It's the garment specifiers who seem to be the problem. Anyway, nearly at the end, so Pamela will start to smile at me because I'm not going to overrun. This is who I am, Charles. You can't see my email address because I've chosen the wrong font. I have the easiest email address in the world, charles@email.com. Simple as that. If you need to find me, I'm a consultant. Apparently, I write for the business press. I'm a lecturer. Ooh, I'm a fellow of the RSA. People might think I know what I talk about. I've just done a paper on fluorocarbons in DWRs and the politics of the chemical companies. If you email me, I'll send it to you. But the work I do is pretty insignificant. Over on that side of the room, I'm going to embarrass them. We have Anna in a white shirt. Anna is Green Room Voice. Benjamin, have I driven Benjamin away? He was the one with a hipster beard. He's the one from AIR, real good brains. If you get an opportunity to talk to them, to go to their seminars, I keep learning because there is not a solution, but working together, we are coming to the solution. The other one is the person sat on the floor, Pamela from the EOG, who is starting to pull us all together in a very effective way. Sorry for embarrassing you guys, but this is it. But if I come back to the very first point that I said, recycling, strategies in recycling, what is the good, the bad, and the ugly? Well, the good, to tell you the truth, is doing something. Anything is good. That's where the biggest change is, from doing nothing to doing something. Even if it's just communicating information to your customers so they know what options are open to them. When you have tried a strategy, the financial people will become involved and your strategy will develop. I wish I could just say, use plan A or option 3 and it will be right for you. Companies have different cultures, different strategies work. Don't worry about it. If you start, you've done the hardest bit. And then whilst I host questions, being an academic, I just put up a set of quotes, which are meant to be inspirational. So, yeah, that's me over with. Pamela, I think you're going to wind me up on questions.
Yeah. Thank you, Charles, for this presentation. So this is question hour for you guys. Just hold your hand up if there's a question you have. I'll get started with one question so you can maybe tune in from there. Charles, you've been referring a lot to different technologies that use either leftover garments and been talking about as well about the pile of garments that is left over at the end of use. Could you maybe break down what happens, the process, what happens from the moment that we discard a garment? What stages goes it through? It's like, what are decisions? Where do they go? What happens to them? So just sort of a very rough breakdown.
In simple terms, if we put a garment into a charity recycling bin, in England, they're done in supermarket. By the way, the supermarket charges that charity to have the bin in their car park. Supermarkets are making money out of this. If the garment is good enough for resale, then it gets appropriated either to their retailers or a third party that it goes on. We have Oxfam. It's Oxfam who had the clothing dump in Huddersfield that burnt down, that M&S Swapping came back. Oxfam have now got to the stage where they're intelligent enough to put the outdoor garments up into the Lake District, which is one of the big outdoor areas, and the trendy garments go into the city centres. But when the item is actually sorted, they try and sort it locally. if it's handed into the shop. But if it goes into a clothing bin, it actually gets taken away. When you're with the big organisations, when I mean taken away, they take it to Eastern Europe. We put it on the back of trucks and we sort it in Europe because it's cheaper sorting it there, even with the footprint of trucking it there and trucking it back. So essentially, that's what happens. The garment comes in, it gets looked at. If it's good enough for resale, it goes there. If it's not good enough for resale, it's assessed in the sorting. And if it's only good enough for rags, that's what happens industrially. If it needs repair, generally, it does not happen. If the garment's in need of repair, it doesn't happen. We shred it and we downgrade it. So does that answer your question, Pamela, from that point of view?
And to maybe follow up for those that are interested, like, there are a couple of books out there, by the way, written by academics that go through the bits and bobs of all different scenarios. And I do remember having read one of them that actually was looking very specifically into the recycling, in quotation marks, I'm saying recycling, industry of garments, hence actually resale of garments by bales in countries like Malawi, in Central Africa, or Côte d'Ivoire, and similar, which raises the question of, well, what are the cultural sensitivities and necessities around actually sending the garments there? What are the pain points?
Are we destroying the local textile industry? And this is an accusation, which is a very true accusation.
Well, is it true? Africa? Because I'm asking this because there are countries like, I'm saying, Ethiopia, that historically never had a proper textile industry in the sense that the locals couldn't afford buying their own textiles. Now, suddenly they can afford buying secondhand textiles and can dress. So that's why I'm asking, what are the cultural sensitivities, the big questions that raise, and how are they being discussed?
It's a good question. And from a cultural point of view, I am personally in favour of the local industries producing a higher quality garment, because that will bring more value into that area. But we are losing the traditional sense. But now in Africa, as a generalization, rather than just having almost the clothing they stand up in, they now have almost a wardrobe full of clothing, because the clothing has become cheap and they can buy it. There are great problems with branded clothing, corporate branded clothing. I know an a McDonald's project I worked on, where McDonald's, when they changed their uniform every so often, just wanted to donate their stockpile of old clothing, but they can't because they fear their logo's going to end up, at worst case, on a child soldier. So we're now working with technologies where we can remove embroidery quite easily and things like that. Does that start to answer more of your question?
Are there questions in the public at this point? This is the opportunity for you to ask Charles questions.
Because if you don't ask me, I'm going to put you on to Anna.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.eu. Copyright April 2016 by Design and Development GmbH, Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.